Welcome, Ed.
Thank you.
I don't think I can live up to that.
I'm not really a poet. I decided about 6 months ago to start writing poetry. So I'm working on it, and I occasionally get one done. But I have been a practitioner for 16 years. I'm a licensed practitioner, and I've spoken here twice, I think, before. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, Lavanya, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Lavanya. The last time I talked here, I think she was about 7 months after conception.
Oh, 7 weeks, maybe? No.
It was 2 months before.
It was a couple of months before she was born.
Before. Yeah. I thought you said after. Oh, after.
It was about 2 months before she was born, I think. But you guys were singing, I remember, and you were sitting over on this side of the room, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so I'm so glad to get a chance to meet her.
Oh,
so.
Thank you. We're glad to hear you.
I'd like to start tonight, or today, by doing something I've never done before. Reading a prayer. And the reason I want to read this is because it came to me while I was getting, decided to get ready for this talk. Connie assigned to me chapter 7 in the book, Can You Talk to God? And I've read this book a couple of times for courses I've taken and that kind of stuff, but that was all like 16 or 17 years ago. So I thought I'd better start reading it again. And after I read the first 6 chapters, and then I read chapter 7, I thought, well, I ought to go a little past that. So I read chapter 8 also. And the last 2 lines of chapter 8 really hit me and ended up being what I wrote a prayer for last week. And so I'd like to start with just that and take you into prayer, but let you just close your eyes and go to that place where you find your own peace. And I'm going to start with those 2 lines at the end of chapter 8 in the book that triggered this. The pent-up energy of life and the possibility of human evolution works through our imagination and will. The time is ready. The place is where we are now. And it is done unto all as they really believe and act. So just pause and feel this present moment right now. The time is ready. We've been through beautiful changes in weather this week. And today we have beautiful sunlight and cool weather. But right now, winter is practically here. And it is divinely dark and rainy and divinely sunny and cold some days. As I sit watching the holy weather, I can imagine and picture both snow and spring flowers in my mind. I am ready for both of them in their time. Yet they are both with me now, right now, in this blessed divine moment. I feel a pent-up energy and my own possibilities for change. I recognize them as simply God in me. I know right now, as I speak and as others listen, that we come together because I can also imagine others listening to me and joining me willfully to enjoy and love this season, however it appears in our own place and time of being. We pause now and feel the presence all around. It is our awareness of the presence that connects us with each other and with the beautiful fall leaves that have been, and the rain and snow and cold air for now, and the warmth and beauty and beautiful flowers to come. We unite across time and space with our imaginations. I realize that my own power is at work as I contemplate and prepare for the next moment consciously, syllable by syllable, word by word, paragraph by paragraph, life by life. I feel my own pent-up energy and willfully allow it into each new word. We feel it as both speaker and listeners. We are each different from one another, and we are each different from who we have been and who we will be, as we each apply our own will to our own imaginations and dreams. That pent-up energy works in all of us all the time. We share our evolution divinely while we each act to move on in our own life. I am so grateful for the umbrella that I used yesterday as I went outside, and for the windows which I can look out now while I'm inside, and for the snow shovel that waits for its time to come. They each allow me to express some of my own pent-up energy in their time. Right now, in this moment, I am willfully grateful and say thank you, God, for my power to believe and act in this life and in this moment. The power of my words comes from the pent-up energy of my beliefs. As I release these words into the law, allowing them to act for me now, in this moment and the next, I accept and let it be, and so it is. Amen. And so just pause for a moment in your own silence and feel it. And feel that presence of whatever it is that you're feeling. And then when you're ready, just come back into the room and open your eyes. As I said, Connie assigned me to Chapter 7.
Judy assigned me to Chapter 7.
Oh, okay. And when I came back to this book, which, as I said, I've read a couple of times, I look at the title and I think, can you? We talk to God? And my first reaction is always, well, duh. I've been doing that since fifth grade. But the chapter we're talking about is Chapter 7, and it's titled The Secret of Spiritual Power. And I guess before I launch into this, since it's Can We Talk to God, I'd like everybody to pause for a minute and think about, what is God for you? We're going to talk a little bit about some of Ernest's talks about the nature of God or spirit or whatever other word, but I'd like you to just think, When I was first started teaching classes at the Celebration Center, I was shocked at the load of baggage that a lot of people came into classes with around the word God. And I was really surprised at that. And some of them don't like to use the word if they've sort of dropped that and gone on with other things. I was not raised in a religion, so I didn't have anything around that, and I still use the word a lot. But I'd like you to pause a minute and just think about what words do you use when you're talking about what you think other people mean God for God or what it is to you. If it might be God, but if you use other words, just think about that for a minute. Pause and think, and then what's the nature of the meaning of that to you? And if you would, just write that word down, or a couple of words that you use in that place on your little notepad, and just think about what it means to you, because that's what we're one of the things we're going to be talking about. So we're talking about the secret of spiritual power. And again, one of my first reactions when I just read the title of that chapter was, there's no secret. But I started thinking, for me, I'm a retired Army officer. A secret is something you can't tell to anyone else. I don't think that's what Ernest is talking about here. So one of the first things I did was, and this is what I'm starting to get hooked on, was I Googled the word secret. And I'm amazed, because I do this a lot now. I'll write secret, definition. Mm-hmm. Pop up, and you get immediately links to a number of different definitions for what it is you're working. So I did that with the word secret, just to see, can I find one that is better for what Ernest is really trying to do? So I Googled it, and right away popped up with secret noun, and it listed several definitions. The first two were sort of my old Army kind of secret, things you can't tell somebody else. But definition number three was a valid but not commonly known or recognized method of achieving or maintaining something. Synonym, blueprint, key, answer, solution. That's what Ernest is talking about here. Sort of the blueprint of spiritual power. So that's where I started, and just figuring out what his title is. Now after that, I'm going to go right to the heart, of what I felt was the heart of what he was intending to say here. And it's on page 44, and I'll just read it directly, because I think this is sort of the guts of what he's talking about in this chapter. The secret of spiritual power is a consciousness of one's union with the whole and the availability of good. We are one with a universal creativeness, which is the God of theology, the spirit of mysticism, the reality of philosophy, and the principle of science. God is accessible to all people. So there's two aspects to that. First is an awareness of the presence or the whole, or just the presence of God, and that's part of it, and your connection with it. And the other is that you can really connect with it, communicate with it, and receive the good. And those are the two keys for this secret to power. So that's it. I'll talk about a few more things. I liked his breakout here, because when I ask you, what do you think of as God or spirit or however, I think this little collection that he's got here sort of, to me, tell me where Ernest is with this. The God of theology. And that's often what I think about as the God that those Christians are talking about, the guy up in the sky. But in a lot of theologies, it's very different and a lot more like mine. or the spirit of mysticism, or the reality of philosophy. When philosophers talk about a lot of things, they don't want to be religious, but they talk about reality. And Furness, that includes God. And the principle of science, that's where law comes into it, which we talk a lot about in the religious science. And science talks about laws. They're more material laws, but those are just part of the big law. So all of that wrapped together is sort of what Ernest, I think, means when he talks about God. Now, I personally focus on the one that says spirit of mysticism. Religious science is classified in some places. I've seen it classified as a metaphysical, mystical religion or teaching. What does mysticism mean? Does anybody have a definition for it that you think of? If you're a mystic, what does that tell them about you?
One with all of life.
One with all of life, all right. Anybody else have one?
One with a direct and conscious connection to source.
Okay. For me, it's always anybody who thinks they can talk directly to God is a mystic. And so, again, I went to Google, and I Googled mysticism definition. And let's see. One popped up, mysticism, a noun. And again, it had a couple of definitions, but the second one was the one that I liked best. A belief in the existence of realities beyond perceptual or intellectual apprehension that are central to being and directly accessible by subjective experience. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that, because I think that fits what Ernest is really talking about, and it fits what I think of as mysticism also. So that's really what we are, and it's in that context that you can interpret everything that's addressed in this book. To go just a little bit further with Ernest, on the next page after that one I read, on page 44, I'll have a quote from him too that says, "Spiritual power arises from a consciousness of our unity with the whole and an awareness of the direct responsiveness of spirit to us." Mm-hmm. That again is this first just awareness of the presence and acceptance of it, and then the second part is our own relationship with it and its responsiveness to us, because that's how we get the good. So those two quotes to me sort of make up the whole secret of what he's talking about when he says the secret of spiritual power. I think the last time I talked here, I talked about how one of the key things for me in my spiritual experiences are what I call synchronicities. But when I'm going with the flow in my life and I'm in contact with spirit and that kind of thing, I'm amazed sometimes at how things come together from two totally different places and match up in some way. And when I was just starting to think about this talk today and this book again, I had one of these. Most of you, I suspect, know Abraham, right? Does everybody know Abraham? You don't. What's her name? Esther Hicks. She channels a spiritual entity or collection of people she calls Abraham. And so she speaks to people as Abraham. And Diane and I have attended several of her live seminars. We've gone on two cruises with her, you know, to Alaska and down to Mexico and done things like that. So I like Abraham very well, although I don't do that much. But several weeks ago, there's a video out now of Abraham talking to Wayne Dyer. And have all of you seen that? I know Connie showed it out here. But And that we presented that at our celebration center. So Diana and I went to it. And I really enjoyed it and liked it again. And I like Wayne Dyer, and I'm very impressed with him. And while I was watching, I sort of had this sense that Abraham was lecturing him in some ways. And I watched him because I thought somebody as well known as him could take some offense at that or something. And he didn't. And he just went with the flow. And I wondered if he'd been coached ahead of time, because when you see these Abraham presentations, Abraham almost always reacts to somebody else sitting in front of her and asking questions or telling stories about their life, and then she reacts in the context of their situation and their life. And that's what Abraham was doing with Wayne Dyer. And he, I think, just allowed himself to play that role, to say things and let Abraham react to it. So it went very well. And as usual, as I listened to it, I thought, I interpret everything that Abraham says as poetry, just like I read the Bible or even this book. So I put my own interpretation on the poetry and draw meaning out of it as if it's poetry. And so I had this thought that Abraham always says things that I can interpret as pretty close to exactly what I believe about reality and spirit and life and that kind of thing. But it's with my interpretation of it. Well, the synchronicity was, that was just turned out to be the night before I decided I had to start thinking about this talk. And I thought, I ought to read this book again. And I sat down and I started reading the next morning. And I got through the first two chapters and I'm thinking to myself, I'm hearing exactly what I heard last night from Abraham. They're saying the same thing. Now, Ernest, again, is a little bit like Abraham. To me, they say the same thing over and over and over and over again. But in the case of Abraham, they always put it in the context of whoever it is that's sitting in front of them. So it comes across as something that's interesting to listen to again, even though you've heard the lesson before, the message before, but she puts it in another context. And I have the same reaction to Ernest. He says the same thing over and over and over again when you get reading. But I consider him to be like a poet. And he puts a different context and different kinds of imagery into what he says, so that he's saying the same thing in this chapter that he said back in chapter one and in Science of Mind, the book. It's different when he says it, because he presents it with a poetic sense of different kinds of terminology and concepts and that kind of thing. So I enjoy reading this stuff. So that was one of my synchronicities, like that. One night and then the next morning, I got this connection and really felt it. I'll just mention one other, because it's sort of my demonstration of how you do what Ernest is talking about in this book. This past week, we've all had some rather interesting weather. You've all lived through it. And last Monday, we had rain and snow and ice, and really got cold. And then Tuesday morning, I woke up and looked outside, and everything was covered with snow and some ice. And it was gorgeous looking out in the back room. Now, that was the day I had really told myself, I've got to go to work on this talk. And I'm a master procrastinator. So I looked out, and I thought, oh my God, the cars are all covered with snow, the street, I don't know if the street's passable and so on, and the walks are bad, and I got to go out and fix some of that stuff. So I went down and got the snow shovel, and got on my warm coat, got all dressed up, and decided to go out and shovel snow. And as I was shoveling, I started becoming aware of the fact that I really also was procrastinating. I didn't need to shovel the snow. I could just let it wait. In fact, somebody yesterday told us that, Sharon and David, I think it was, they said, if you just wait long enough, it melts by itself.
My philosophy.
But I'm out there shoveling snow. Now, because I've had a new ankle and a new knee this year, I haven't done anything like this year. And I'm just learning how to blow leaves again and rake leaves and stuff. And so I thought, I was just impressed with myself, the fact that I could shovel the snow and really went to work. And it was sort of wet and sticky on the bottom because the ground was still warm. So it was heavy when you're shoveling it and so on. But I had no trouble. So I started actually enjoying it. And then I started thinking about, but I'm procrastinating. And I went through getting all the walks shoveled. I shoveled out the driveway a little bit. I cleaned off all the snow off the cars. And then I decided I got to take the cars out because who knows what the streets are like out there. And we were all thinking, you know, stores may be closed. Who knows? So I got in the first car I cleaned off, and I thought, I'm going to see if I can get out of the neighborhood. And our street was, you know, pretty slushy, hadn't been plowed or anything, but I was able to drive through it and got out, and the main streets weren't that bad. So I went down around Fairfax Circle and came back and just had an excursion and, you know, went out. And then I cleaned off the other car, and then I thought, well, I got to drive that one too. And I'll go a different way out so I can see what the neighborhood looks like. And going that way, all of a sudden, I did find a downed tree and a power line right across the street and so on. So I had to turn around and come back and go around another block and so on. So we'd had some damage in the neighborhood. And I enjoyed just looking at that. But I, the whole time, I'm still sort of got this haunt behind me about you're procrastinating. Go in there and work on this clock. And then I started thinking, well, I'm talking about the secret of spiritual power. I should somehow turn this into a spiritual experience. But so I was just enjoying it. And on the second drive out with the car, I thought, are the stores even opening? And I started realizing they were. And so I thought, well, I can go to Trader Joe's. So I did, and I called Diane to see if she wanted anything. And when I got back from that, it was a nice little excursion. And I was just sort of going with the flow, which is one of my spiritual processes. I came in again thinking, now I've got to go to work on this talk. And I've been procrastinating too long. And I'm getting in and thinking, okay, the next thing I'm going to do, I probably ought to read the chapter 7 again. I was just sort of starting to think about doing that, and Diane looked at me and said, would you like to do one more thing for me?
Yes.
Yes! And she wanted me to go down Moe and Bill Osborne's house to pick up a pot, roasting pot that we had left there at a party the previous weekend. And I thought, oh, yes, I'll do that. They live right near the Celebration Center. So I thought, oh, that's a good excursion to go on and drive through this, see what the weather's like. So as I drove out of our neighborhood, I was still in the neighborhood. Again, I'm thinking, this is going too far. I'm procrastinating terribly on this. And as I got up to the outside of our neighborhood where I was getting ready to pull out onto Boley Highway, and I pulled out, I just thought, oh, I got to change this somehow. I got to drop that thought of procrastination, get in. And I pulled over to the side of the road, and I stopped. And I just thought, I'm going to meditate for a minute. And I stopped. And I really did become aware of the presence and its power around me. And then I opened my eyes and I looked up down Boley Highway. And there's a development there called Great Falls. Got huge trees. And I love watching those trees as I drive down this highway. And it's normally dark trees against a light sky behind them. This morning, the trees were all covered totally with snow. And the sky was dark with nasty-looking clouds. So it was white against a dark background. And I just looked at that and I thought, oh, my God. I can do this. And I slowly started out onto the highway again, and I got this consciousness about, now be aware of what's around you, especially other drivers, so you can drive safely. And I got that connection and started watching all around me, saw the traffic, and I pulled out back onto Lehigh. There wasn't much traffic, fortunately, that morning. And I start going again. And my first little experience was I drove by the Army-Navy Country Club. I do that about 3 times a day, and I've been doing it for 38 years. But as I drove by, all of a sudden, at one point, I got this flash just as I looked out there where I had a clear channel between trees, and I could see all the way to the other side of the country club. And I saw the rooftop of a building, which I was pretty sure was a house over on the other side of Old Pickett Road, like over a half mile away. Because of all the trees there and everything, normally, you can't see across that place. But because the leaves were off the trees, and in a couple of cases I discovered the next morning, I went back and checked it out again, there were a couple of branches down in the evergreens that were right there that opened this channel. And I thought, first time in 38 years, I looked across and saw the other side of this place. And I thought, isn't that an amazing experience? And then I just said, become mindful of your amazement. And I did. And I proceeded. And I come down and I approach Fairfax Circle. I go through there 3 or 4 times a day for 38 years. And the thought occurred to me as I drove up, if I closed my eyes, I could probably drive around this circle several times. And then the thought came, except for the mystery of these other drivers and what in the world they're going to be doing. And I have no, and then I just became aware of all of the other cars and sort of watched drivers' faces and thought, I have no idea what's going on with those people, what's in their head right now, where are they headed, where are they coming from. It's all part of the secret, the mystery. And I said, I love the mystery. That's why one of my words for God, although I'm comfortable with God, so I use that a lot, but one of my words is mystery, with a capital M. I use that all the time. So that's what I started celebrating, and I just kept on going. And the other thing I really wanted to talk about today is, how many know what the butterfly effect is? It's a theory about how even a butterfly, when it sits someplace and flaps its wings, physically, there's an energy goes out that can affect things all the way around the world. And a lot of time, and most of the time, the butterfly is not conscious of that, what it creates and affects. So to me, that's what I think of as the butterfly effect, that in so many ways, we do things that affect other people, and we have no concept. Just as a lot of times somebody else does something that affects us, and they have no idea. And I had 2 examples of that on this drive. I got down to where on Arlington Boulevard, US 50, where it comes to Graham Road, where you turn left to go to our church, and I was turning left to go to Moan Bills. But I suddenly had this memory. I looked around me as I was stopped waiting for the light, and I looked across. And I noticed these chain link fences that are right on either side of the road. And I suddenly had this memory of about, I'm not sure, time is not one of my dimensions, 10, 15 years ago. I was approaching that same intersection, except I was going to somebody else's house, not to the church, and I was going to turn right at that intersection. And as I approached it, there were 3 lanes of stopped traffic again, stopped for the stoplight. But I pulled over into the right-hand lane, and there was nobody in the right-hand lane. So I'm just zooming down the right-hand lane, go 10 or 15 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, these 2 adolescent girls came running through between the cars that were all stopped there and right in front of me. One of them bounced off the side of my front fender, and one of them got in front of me, and I hit her. But I had got my foot on the brake and stopped, so I did not run over her or anything. She just sort of bounced off and fell down on the highway. But it shocked me. And I got out immediately, and because traffic was stopped there, everybody else saw this, or a lot of people did. And so everybody came over to help, and it looked, the girls claimed they were okay, but they both looked hurt. And somehow, very quickly, the police showed up. That was after, you know, cell phones had just started, I think, back then. Somebody called 911. And the police came very quickly. And the police talked to other people that had seen this and quickly determined that this was not my fault and that those kids were sort of jaywalking. And so they came over and assured me that I was okay. I was not going to have a problem with this. And they also wanted to have the girls taken to the hospital, though, to check out, because one of them had some blood and you know, that kind of thing. And I always wondered after that what effect that had on those girls. But when I was noticing these chain link fences Tuesday when I was driving down there, then I had this memory that about 3 months after I had that accident, they started putting up these chain link fences. And they put them all along there so that pedestrians cannot cross at that place. Because there's a shopping center right there and a big housing development on the other side, and there's always a huge places. And then shortly after that, they put up a stoplight just for a pedestrian crossing that's about 100 yards from Graham Road. And I had this reaction the other day that my accident may have been what pushed everything across the line to have somebody say, we got to do something about this. And then I asked myself the question, have any lives been saved because of that? And if that's true, then directly I saved some lives. And actually, these two girls who ran through traffic and crossed in front of me, same thing. What they did may have saved some lives. That's this butterfly effect I talk about. And that's one of my primary senses of spiritual connection with everything going on around me, that we become aware of the fact that we all affect one another in this intimate way, and in most cases without ever knowing it. After I got through that intersection the other day, then I went on, picked up the pots, and I ended up coming back on Lee Highway. And just a second little example, a more minor one, I stopped again at Gallows Road for a stoplight. And I just happened to look in my rearview mirror. And I saw very clearly the face of the guy in the car behind me. He looked just like a good friend of mine, an old Army friend, who died about 6 years ago. And just suddenly seeing that face just brought all kinds of memories into my head. And it hit me right then. That guy behind me is having a big effect on me. Mm-hmm. And he has no idea. And that's the butterfly effect again. When you become aware of just that, the mystery around you and the possibilities and everything else, that's the secret of spiritual power. And I'm going to end with one thing. This is another little synchronicity. Our friend Ann Tongren, who has been here a couple times, her partner died, or she was told he was in the hospital getting ready to die when she was here before. She was at her house this weekend, and she just said, I got to share this with you. And she gave me this document that somebody had just handed to her at some event she was at. And I read it, and I just thought, I'll use this as a closing, because this ties again to how we do our spiritual work and this little bit of just becoming aware of what's around you and putting your own interpretation on things at times. But this is titled Guidance. And it just said, author unknown. But it says, when I meditated on the word guidance, I kept seeing, in quotes, dance, which is the last part of guidance, at the end of the word. I remember reading that doing God's will is a lot like dancing. When two people try to lead, nothing feels right. when movement doesn't, the movement doesn't flow with the music, and everything is quite uncomfortable and jerky. When one person realizes this and lets the other lead, both bodies begin to flow with the music. One gives gentle clues, perhaps with a nudge to the back or pressing lightly in one direction or another. It's as if two become one body, moving beautifully. The dance takes surrender, willingness, and attentiveness from one person and gentle guidance and skill from the other. My eyes drew back to the word guidance. When I saw G, I thought of God, followed by you and I. God, you and I dance. This statement is what guidance means to me. As I lowered my head, I became willing to trust that I would get guidance about my life. Once again, I became willing to let God lead. My prayer for you today is that God's blessings and mercies be upon you and your family on this day and every day. May you abide in Him and He, as He abides in you. Dance together with God. Trust Him to lead and guide you through each season of your life. Now that can sound a little Christian to some of us, and you know, but to me it's basically saying the same thing that Ernest says in this book. And it's going with the flow, which is one of the themes of my life. So,
thank you.
Thank you.